Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing. 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Launch Angle Podcast. This is your new host, Rob DiPietro. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name is Rob. I host a podcast called the Pull Hitter Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. I'm super honored and grateful and blessed to be able to do this wonderful podcast, the Launch Angle Podcast, with two heavyweight industry giants in Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. But before I go any further, I just want to thank Van Lee for not only starting this wonderful podcast and for hosting it, but for being really helpful and helping me get this podcast on the road by transferring the feed and all that garbage that you guys don't need to know about. But it's not an easy process for someone like me who's not really tech savvy, but we did it and we're here, and I couldn't be any more thrilled about it. So thanks, Van, for passing the torch, and we're going to be going forward right here. We're going to be picking up pretty much where the Launch Angle Podcast was always so formidable and great, and finding those late gems in drafts. So we're going to start at pick 150 ADP in the NFBC, and we're looking pretty much in the last month of Draft Champions, 15-team leagues without any fab, so 50 rounds of draft and hold. And we're going to try to mirror what it might be like coming up into the main event season. So you'll hear us talk about a lot about how players might shift up or down depending on roles or performance during spring training heading into main event season. So we start off at 150. We'll be talking about a whole bunch of pitchers, guys like Chris Bassitt, Luis Garcia, Dustin May, Jordan Montgomery, Chris Sale, Charlie Morton, Pablo Lopez, and a whole bunch of first basemen as well. Ryan Mountcastle, Anthony Rizzo, Jose Miranda, Rowdy Tellez, and sprinkled in with a couple more other batters and hitters. So really looking forward to getting this show on the road. So without me keeping the blab on, we're going to bring to you the show. Welcome back, everyone. And I hope you enjoy this journey forward with us, because I think it's going to be something really fantastic. Here we go. Let's get hot.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome, everyone, to the relaunch of the Launch Angle Podcast. I am your new host, Rob DiPietro. I'm here with Mr. Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. Rob, Jeff, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Where the hell's Van? What's going on? Who the hell are you?
I don't know. Who am I? I'm going to find out today who I am.
Can I tell you to you guys a true story off the bat before we dive into this? So I'm not a young man anymore. And I have made it. And this is 100% true. I have made it my entire life without ever breaking a bone. I have never had a serious injury. I have never broken anything. We decided, jokes aside, Rob was going to join us as our new host about 10 days ago. We came to the decision that Rob was going to come on as the new host of the Launch Angle podcast. I shit you not, that night I fractured my ankle. And there are only two possible explanations of how that would have happened for longtime listeners of the podcast. Number one, Van has a voodoo doll and is slowly poking pins inside various body parts of mine. Or number two, Van has a gift, and Van had many gifts when he was hosting the show. But he was, needless to say, our injury expert, and he's decided to bequeath on me that gift. And now that I've fractured an ankle, I'm pretty sure like in the next 2 weeks, my obliques are going to go and then my shoulder is going to go. But fuck, it hurts. Anyways, that's my true story to kick this off. I am 1/100th the Van Lee. I've had every injury, because now I've had one injury and it sucks. Anyways, how are you guys doing?
I've had injuries all my life, so it's just, I am the, you know, perfect suit for the new Van, you know, we're just carrying that trait, but hopefully he doesn't have a, you know, doll on you, Rob, because we're going to have to wrap you in bubble wrap in Vegas, you know, because we can't have you hurt the whole year.
Yeah, you've heard about my Wednesday nights in Vegas, if you're talking about bubble wrap for Vegas for me.
I have not. That was
just joking.
Oh man, but I'm excited to be able to do this with you guys. So I hope you guys are super excited to get back on the mic. Either you're really excited to do podcasting again, because I mean, you guys said, yeah, sure, we'll podcast with this little Italian meatball.
but so what are we going, like 16 hours today?
Today is going to be, yeah, we're going to ease everyone in with a 16-hour pod, and then we'll slowly go up from there. We're going to break the record.
Not today.
Not today, Satan. Absolutely not. So, all right, let's kick this off with just a brief little talk about, are you guys doing anything different for this draft season? Have you added anything to your draft prep, or are you looking at different things you haven't looked at recently? Rob, you want to lead us off?
A big difference, I haven't been podcasting, so I really haven't been doing a lot of draft prep this year. We're going to see how that goes for me. No, like, I've been doing most of the same stuff I do seriously most years. I'm different, as people know, from a lot of people. My first draft of the year will be in Vegas on the Saturday morning this year. Like, I don't do drafts to draft prep. I'm weird that way. But I feel pretty good about where I'm at. I have a pretty good feel for the player pool, kind of have a strategy starting to percolate. Like lots of people said, it'll be really nice having a full spring training plus WBC to take all of that in. But there's nothing specific this year. I think the biggest challenge, I don't know about you guys, the biggest challenge for me is not adding things. It's making sure that there's so much information. There's so many sites and podcasts and so much out there. It's actually just staying focused on what I'm trying to do and keep the noise out. So it's not listening to everything, because to me, that just messes with my mind. I'd much rather have opinions on every player baked before I start consuming other people's content. So I'm, I guess, a little bit different than other people that way too. I don't listen or read to as much as I probably should, but for better or for worse, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually my prep is like all over the place, since with like content, sometimes I'm doing like some second base preview for somewhere and I have to end up like, I'm all over second baseman, but haven't done a single, looked at an outfielder or, you know, how to do relief pitchers. But this year I haven't done that. But so usually in the past, it's always kind of been a hodgepodge. Probably the two things I'm doing different this year is, one, as I look back, and I was really bad with rookies identifying them. So I kind of made up some simple rules in season to try to figure out if they're good or not. I ain't got like all day and ask around and just figure out if I should be looking at the guy or not. And
just go to Steamer, Jeff. They're all good. They're all going to have 120 WRC plus when they come out. So just go to their Steamer page, see that they're good, and assume that they're going to be good for all of them. I'm just, well, I'm not.
Are they
joking.
All got 50 grades on everything?
It's a big
Everyone's
problem
average?
With Steamer, guys.
Yeah. And the other one, which goes back to drafting for like the NFBC in Vegas, is Tanner Bell and I draft together, and we were using completely different processes. So when it comes to Vegas, we literally spent like the whole day before the draft, like, who do you have here, in making our draft list? So we actually got something, so at least we're on the same page starting that way. And then when we get there, we can actually enjoy our time there instead of figuring out where each of us are in our drafts, because we're kind of each off on our own little tangent then.
I guess, Rob, your draft prep is a little bit different this year, because you've just decided to do 700 podcasts between you know, November and March. Is that the big difference for you, or is there anything else that you've changed up for this year?
I've also tried to eliminate things that I felt weren't giving me, I guess, not the result I wanted. It's just time better spent on the things I wanted to spend on. I've been reading a lot less articles and just doing more digging into my own mining a news, my own prep into numbers and such like that. Trying to look at the trend in baseball and kind of like adjusting my strategy a little bit to how I want to draft. So I spent a lot of time just looking at how good teams were built last year and how in the leagues I did poorly in, what went wrong? Was it just bad evaluation, injuries, or just overall poor team construction? And it came down to, I realized I wasn't taking enough pitching Earlier in draft, and I've adjusted that kind of in DCs now, just trying to at least get 4 or 5 SPs by pick 150, pick 175. I just feel a lot more comfortable that way. I had a lot of times last year where I was starting Mike Minor and the likes of that, and I just don't want to do that anymore.
Jeff will hire you as his intern if you're doing all the mining the news work for him. God. He'd be very happy to pay you in like popsicles out of his freezer to read all of the local beat writers bullshit coverage over the winter and just send him little like links to actual usable story links. Is my guess, Jeff.
I was just doing that. It's so bad right now because everyone's either rehashing it or it's just questions. Can so and so do this? It's like nothing useful at all. And I probably went through like 20 articles and found like one useful piece of information. And it was just what someone thinks is going to be the closers, which isn't really useful, but we need some players to show up. I think the beat writers are done. I think we've done making stuff up. We need to see who's actually good and who's not.
We need to know who's in the best shape of their lives. Like who's been really cranking it under the squat rack this winter. That's what I need to know.
Yeah. Is there a correlation of squats to ISO or something like that?
There is a negative correlation. Like I remember Cespedes was the worst. He did an ESPN special where he was like squatting 685. He was deadlifting like 950 pounds. And I was like, oh my God, how is it possible that this guy has tight quads and hamstrings and like can barely walk despite the fact that he's basically training to be a power lifter? It was ridiculous.
Yeah. That's just too, there's not enough flexibility there and just doing that. And I mean, but he was able to ride horses on his ranch though. No problem saddling up.
Him and Cueto, they're racing.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, you have some recent articles on Fangraphs, two of them in the Mind in the News, and you had a shoulder spotlight on Fernando Tatis' surgery. So I just wanted to hear your conclusion of like how you feel about Fernando Tatis this year and his prospects for coming not only to be healthy, but be effective on the field.
I think he's going to be effective. I just don't know if he's going to be as effective as the best player in baseball effective. Like I kind of looked at it and it was like, wrote like, oh, he took a hit and he's going to be hit as good as well as Paul Goldschmidt. And like everyone or half the people got offended by that. And it was like, wait, that's still like, you know, top 12 player in baseball type of thing. And he might get it back in the future, but it's just one of those deals where just looking at the guys I've had that shoulder surgery, I'm kind of got me gun shy. I should have noticed it with Avisail Garcia last year. Like, oh, he had this, I know there was other comments about him, but it's like, if he had that shoulder surgery and was borderline anyway, it's tough to know what's going on. I mean, tough to know where he's going out because some of those guys just Bellinger just hasn't ever come back. You know, it's not been the same. The one guy that worries me a little bit besides Tatis is Corbin Carroll. I don't know if his shoulder surgery kind of everyone saw him when he before it and he was great and all this. And I wonder if people still think he's going to get back to that greatness or if he's just going to kind of be a little bit leveled down. Like his power has kind of been wanting compared to what other people have seen him do and hope for. So I think he can still steal a lot of bases, but maybe that's limited his upside some. The other thing going back to Tatis, which it happened when he got hurt, is I don't know how much he's going to run. If they're just going to be like, take it easy this year, let's get everything going, you know, just crank the ball and let's just not get you hurt and make it through a year. I don't know if Tatis would agree to that, but I could kind of see the team want him to do that. Just be like, you know, this year, let's just get everything safe. Or if we need a steal, we'll let you go. But let's just not push it and keep you on the field as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'll save this for our first round ADP preview episode. But it's not like you're getting that much of a discount on Tatis. And there's the shoulder that Jeff mentioned. There's the wrist. There's the PEDs. And I know everybody poo-poos the PEDs, but he was doing PEDs. And lots of players have stopped doing PEDs, stopped doing PEDs, and still been really good. Others were not so sure about. So you put all of that together, and it's like if you hit him at like, let's say he's going at the 15-16 turn by main event, which I think if he has a full spring training, he'll go even earlier than that. And he's awesome. then you've gotten like top five player with your 15th pick. That's really, really good, but it hasn't changed the needle that much. Whereas there are so many things that could go wrong with him. Re-injury, which is by definition a higher probability of injury if you're coming off of surgery, or his wrist holds back his power, his shoulder holds back his power. He dies. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong at a still premium pick. So like on a just a risk reward basis, regardless of what the projections say, and the projections obviously still love him for good reason. There will always be somebody who is a bit safer, and I'll go for the double in that pick instead of the grand slam, which is really what you're going for with Tatis.
And speaking of the first round, the ADP analysis, you go on the RotoWire podcast yesterday with James Anderson, which is wonderful. You tell everyone that Rodon is your three, Strider's your four, and Strider goes, rumor on the street, according to Mr. John Fish, that Strider just went seventh overall in a draft. So the Rob Silver helium is back and better than ever.
It's such boring shit when everybody just says the same stuff over and over again. At least change things up. Like, that's why we're doing our round 23 analysis today, just to shake drafts up.
Exactly.
Actually doing round 23.
Not to start with, anyway.
Yeah, not
yet. We're going to try to get Jordan Montgomery into the top 20. Exactly. That's the goal today. one quick thing on your mining news, Jeff, is your the San Diego Padres starting pinching situation.
Oh my God, dude.
It is really incredible. They're going to rely on Nick Martinez and Seth Lugo, converted relievers / three, four inning guys. I don't know how they're going to piece this together, but if they get any injuries at the top of their staff, they're in trouble. Do you see them, either you guys, do you see them adding another arm before the season starts?
Well, the worst is they want to go six man. Like, so they're going to pull like Murijan. Is that how you pronounce it? Murijan? Or yeah. Like Groom, which have never made it through a whole season. Use them. Or are they going to like get Julio Teheran out of the Dominican League, since he, was doing fine there, and throw him out? I have no clue. And if they like, so they're relying on three guys at the top, which not like ideal injury history. So, and then you're ending up like if one of those guys go down, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe their plan is just to make the playoffs or get to the trade deadline and add someone or a couple people, but I have no clue how they plan on making the bottom half of their staff work.
Yeah, it feels like a Michael Wacha. Like, and Michael Wacha is not awesome, but at least he's better likely than Seth Lugo, and just they need some length in that rotation. So we'll see if they make one more move. It sure feels like they need one more guy there at least.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get right into the ADP. We're going to start at about ADP 150. This is looking at draft champions for the last month. The first guy that we're going to lead off with is newly signed Toronto Blue Jay Chris Bassitt, who's going at pick 150. SP 45 off the board. Jeff, what do you think about Chris Bassitt this year?
I think he's fine, but I was a little like concerned about his second half. It kind of just fell apart. His K minus walk percentage was down about 6 percentage points. But yeah, normally, like I said, the projections still like him, where he's like an 8.5 guy with a great walk rate. He doesn't walk anyone. But I think he's draftable with everyone else, but compared to some of the other guys going around him later, I think I would take him about a round later is where I kind of stand with him.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of lump the first two players we're talking about, which is Bassitt and Luis Garcia of Houston. First off, I penalize anybody named Luis Garcia by rule about 20 SGPs just because I don't want to have to deal with trying to find their Fangraph page and figure out which Luis Garcia we're talking about. As a Jays fan, I like the Chris Bassitt signing. Fantasy-wise, for both Garcia and Bassitt, there's at least five other starting pitchers we're going to talk about today who I like more than them, which is not anti them. What they are is they're good, especially in a DC. They're glue guys. They're going to give you some volume and they're not certainly not going to kill you. So they're not upside guys. But if you have two, three starting pitchers by this point, by round 11, who are good, you have a good closer. So you have like you have a strikeout base. They're on good teams. They're going to give you in today's baseball lots of innings. And I don't need necessarily on the right team construct massive upside, but certainly in a fab league, if I'm thinking like NFBC main event, we will almost every other pitcher we're going to talk about for a variety of reasons, I will like more. So they're not bad picks to me. They're just probably not picks, whether it's Bassett or Luis Garcia, that I'm likely to make in this year's drafts. If I had to gun to my head pick between the two of them, I like Luis Garcia's strikeout upside a lot more than Bassett's. So I think I would take Luis Garcia over Bassett if I had to take one of the two of them.
I blame both of their ADPs on you, Rob. Silver, when you talked about wins are important, wins are key at first pitch, and everyone's like, hey,
get Houston, these Toronto, on let's go. Yeah.
Yep.
No, and that's not nothing. They are both guys who are on teams that should win games, that let their starters go deep into games, that have decent bullpens. So, like, from a fantasy perspective, that makes them just fine picks here, I think.
Yeah, I actually like Garcia, too, with you. It's got a better injury history. Bassett's had some things. He's younger. I think that there's just a little bit, just a tad bit better. But I just think they're around maybe too early. Is what they're going.
Yeah. Bassett is kind of interesting. It's 5% decrease of NK percentage in the second half. And he kind of changed his pitch mix a little bit in the second half versus lefties. I'm just kind of wondering why he also threw his slider a lot less in the second half. I was watching a lot of the Met games and it's just such an effective pitch and he was slowly throwing it more and more and then he kind of just ditched it. And again, that could have been the amount of righties and lefties he faced that percentage kind of went down but then he also started incorporating his cutter too and it got better in swinging strikes, zone contact, whiff percentage. So I do like Chris Bassett the pitcher, and I don't know how to really grade the moving to a new team and new division type thing, but I think he's a good solid arm. I think, Rob, like you said, if you got some high K guys up top and he just kind of fills out your innings. And Luis Garcia, he just seems that he just does everything pretty average, but he does have a little more of a capacity to have a better year upside wise. But I think I'll still take Bassett out of these guys. I guess that's just maybe a recency bias of watching him so many times. He just has that gamer in him, like Maddie would like to say, that dog in him. So we're just going to skip over Garcia. We just kind of cut into him a little bit, right? Unless you guys have anything more to say on Luis Garcia. All right. So the next guy on our list is Mr. Giancarlo Stanton of the New York Yankees. He is going right now. Pick 152, average as early as 121. And pretty interesting, Mr. Stanton, who's had a really crazy low BABIP this year. I don't know how to really read that. Seems like his profile kind of shifted a little bit in terms of where he hit his ground balls, like a lot more up the middle and to the right side. But I don't know if that rebounds a little bit. Are we expecting him to go back to Giancarlo Stanton or is he just Jorge Soler?
There's just a lot of like athletic stuff that his sprint speed went down. He's just kind of now just a power hitter. I don't know if he can run anymore. With that said, like he just needs to hit home runs and stay on the field, but he's not been able to even do that. I think he's one of those people, which I just don't see myself taking the chance on him. Like if I'm at this point in the draft, I haven't had power. I've really, really screwed up because there's been plenty of power available. It's more of like, oh, I haven't got any speed at this point. So I guess you could see someone take a chance on him, but he's been on the IL like almost three full seasons of his career, like almost 440 some days. And yeah, his power was just down. This isn't the year to do it. I would like to see him be healthy somewhat. Like he ended so bad. Like over the last 45 days, he had a 633 OPS. So I don't know. I'm just not going to take a chance. There's someone we'll talk about here in a little bit that I will gladly take a chance on with him. And I think that there's a higher upside than there is with Stanton.
So he's earned this draft price exactly once in the last four seasons. It used to be that if you took projections for Giancarlo Stanton, whether it was just steamer or you aggregated, it didn't really matter. And you wish casted, boy, if Giancarlo Stanton could stay healthy and get you 625, 650 plate appearances, he's a first round value. And then you would talk yourself off the ledge and you'd have like a reasonable person like Jeff and says, but you can't say that, you know, Stanton's going to play 158 games and get to 650 plate appearances. And then the response would be, but yeah, but he'd be a first round player. Now, if you crank up his playing time, he's like a seventh round player, a sixth round player. And that's like assuming he has the fully healthy season. That equation doesn't work for me. Like when if you said, boy, if you can just catch lightning in a bottle, you have a first round pick in the 10th round, then like depends on your team, depends on the contest and your risk tolerance. But taking a 10th round pick for a seventh round value, like on projections, and we all know like Giancarlo Stanton is one of those guys. He hits the ball so hard. He still has like 98% of the like exit velocities over blah, 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 or Giancarlo Stanton. Nobody even, you know, O'Neill Cruz is going to have to be in baseball for at least another 6 months before he passes Giancarlo. Like Giancarlo Stanton will always, he'll be 92 years old and he'll still hit the ball hard. But the risk reward equation is way off right now. And I think people who are taking him here are paying for the name more than the actual production. He is a 2.5 category guy at this point. And I agree with Jeff. Like there are, if all I want is power, there's one guy here who I will bet a lot of money. We'll probably get to him today, but we may not. We'll hit more home runs than Stanton. So yeah, this is a hard pass for me, recognizing that maybe this is a great year for him, but I think you're paying for the name more than the actual production at this point.
Yep, 36th outfielder off the board. Obviously, Yankee Stadium has that beautiful right field porch, the minor league part of the field, as you said yesterday, Robin, the RotoWire podcast. He had 14 opposite field barrels last year and 13 went for homers. That's 92%. The league average is 36% on opposite field barrels that go for homers. But his distance on those shots went from 353 to 377. So, I mean, he still got that, you know, that thump in the bat. So, and I guess maybe too, not only the name recognition, but all the people who, you know, like myself, who did so bad in power last year and they have that burned in the back of their mind and they're like, I have to get this power. And especially the outfield, you know, that's all you're hearing too. Outfield is scarce and there's no outfielders left in 300, you know? So he checks off two of those boxes for sure. You know, okay, Jeff, sorry.
I was just going to say one thing I've noticed with outfielders is I started to like on the redraft format versus draft and hold. I think there's a lot like on the late outfielders around the 300 or later, there's just a lot of unknown situations that I think we'll know or into the season or early in spring training where those outfield situations are going to be. So I think that in draft and hold, it's probably bad, but I think the situations will clear up. We will get a few more outfielders once the playing time or just how teams handle it. We just don't know right now. So it's like, oh, these three guys all have a shot at it, but the team only has so many bench spots. So
great.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Next guy on the list here, Dustin May, starting pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers, 46th starter off the board. Obviously, we know, everybody knows he's got filthy stuff, four really good pitches. But if you are a projection guy and you're running your auction calculators, you probably won't take him at his cost because of that innings pitched projection. So are we buying that he will either pitch more than they're projecting for or be more effective? Jeff,
I don't know how he's going here. Maybe he's got a great stuff plus score or something like that. I have no idea, but I mean, he lost about 1 mile an hour off his fastball. Maybe he'll get it back. Maybe he wasn't. He had no control at all last year when he was back. He's coming off the injury. He can't keep his velocity up in the few starts he had. He just almost lost 2 mile an hour from the first to the third time through the order. What? Yeah, literally, I think I would take Bassett and Garcia over him. And as much as we drop them down, that's how far I drop May down. I have just no desire at all for him right now. I just like maybe that people are looking for upside or whatever. But I mean, we're going to talk about Charlie Morton here in a bit. And Charlie Morton's done better than Dustin May has in the past. So it's a huge pass for me.
So in his career as a starting pitcher, he has a 22.8% strikeout rate and a 7.2% walk rate, which is basically Chris Bassett. So it's always been the thing with Dustin May, right? The stuff, the raw stuff, and the results are very different, which doesn't mean that at some point it doesn't all come together for him. So what are the pro Dustin May arguments? One is it's not like he's starting from a horrendous base. Like a 22.8% strikeout rate is something to build off of. Not elite, but it's pretty good. There is upside. The projections per inning like him. And Dodgers magic. I mean, that's what you're buying when you buy Dustin May here, is the syllogism. He pitches for the Dodgers. The Dodgers make starting pitchers great, and therefore they will make Dustin May great. What's the real anti-Dustin May argument? Like everything Jeff said, it's his fifth season. He's got 25 career starts. Like it's time for his career to either get going or it's not happening. Like he's going to become a reliever or they're going to move on for him at a certain point. And it's not that he's not super talented and he's got crazy stuff, but it really has to get going. The only other thing I'd say is 2 points on the innings. One, we had a lot of the same conversations about Julio Urias not that long ago, and he leapt by 100 innings in one season. So the Dodgers have shown that they will leap their pitchers. They're not Verducci guys or whatever, and they're smarter than that. So they may leap him 100 innings. The problem with that is leaping him 100 innings gets you to 130 innings. So you need him to be leaping by 150 to get where you want him to get. Not really, but by a lot. So yeah. You're wish casting when you take Dustin May here. And I know some people like wish cast drafting. It's not my style necessarily. Like, would I be shocked if Dustin May works out for you here in the 11th round? It wouldn't shock me, but just at least acknowledge that's what you're doing here, is you're counting on big skill advance, big volume advance. And why? At the end of the day, it's because it's the Dodgers. If it was Dustin May with the exact same stuff who was playing on Cincinnati or Pittsburgh or literally almost any other team besides the Dodgers, we would not be having this conversation. We'd be talking about him in 8-9 weeks. That's the honest truth. We would not be talking about Dustin May, identical stuff on any other team but the Dodgers. But he is on the Dodgers, and they really need him this year. They don't have... They have, like, they're the Dodgers. They have organizational depth. They really need Dustin May to be a starting pitcher this year, I think. So we'll see. But c'est pas pour moi, as Phil would say, which means it's not for me, dog.
Oh, we need a t-shirt like that. Oh, my God. Yeah, I agree. I think just May is just a little too risky. I think you're 100% right. A total wish casting. And maybe in a fab league at a certain price in the 200s, because there's a bunch of, I think, shit pitchers after 200 in between 250. I think he would fit in great there to take a shot, but not in a DC for me. Next guy on the list is Mr. Ryan Mountcastle, the 13th first baseman off the board, 6th overall in the major league in barrels, and only 22 home runs, big drop from 33, but he's the only guy in the top 10 of barrels last year, overall barrel leaders, to not be in the top.
Do you play any barrel leagues, Rob? Like, do you play in leagues where barrels are a category? Because you're talking like it's a category.
I'm just giving what I'm seeing here. I wonder, barrels per plate appearance or barrels per batted ball?
Well, are you in the commission, the league commissioner, having a meeting changing the rules from barrels to barrels per plate appearance? Like, is that a rule change your league is doing this year?
We got barrels versus lefties, barrels versus righties, everything.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like a fun league. If there's any openings, can you email me, or if you guys are doing a mock draft to get ready for your barrel league, if you could send me an invite, I'd love to get a piece of this.
a mock barrel league. Oh my God, forget about it. Twitter would go nuts. Twitter would break.
Can we live stream that shit and then decide who won our barrel league mock draft at the end of it?
I would love to.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, do you have the internal standard deviation and the intra standard deviation for his barrels in your projections? Do you know what the intra standard deviation and
No, I don't.
You don't have that?
No, okay. I don't.
Sorry, no. I had to ask. Ryan Mountcastle, I think we wanted to talk about him.
Yes, Ryan Mountcastle. So anyway, like I was saying, the guys with the most barrels last year, top 10 barrel leaders. He's the only guy not in the top 50 ADP. Schwarber is the lowest of them at 50. So why is Ryan Mountcastle going this late, Jeff?
Because as people will get annoyed, we're going to talk about a first baseman and then another first baseman and another first baseman, another first baseman and another first baseman. It's just this huge group. There's Rizzo, there's Miranda, there's Bell, there's Tellez, there's Ty France. I think what everyone's seeing is like, from doing drafts, these guys are always toward the top of my board, but it's like, why do I need to get one until they start going? So I don't know if that will change. I think it's a good place that I think everyone just kind of said that this is where they'll stay and other things will move up. Some starting pitching will, but it's just a nice little group of first basemen and people haven't decided that Mountcastle is just that much better than all the other ones that are going around here. He does just hit the ball hard. I don't really actually use barrels. As one as I use like the hard hit rate, and that's kind of almost off the charts, almost 50%. Like close to like Stanton. Like he just crushes the ball. He has a nice level of swing. May give you a few steals, not like zero in it from first base. And I don't know if I push him to number one, but I can, out of this group, I can see why he's the first one going that we're going to talk about continuously here during this first base podcast.
Yeah, put it this way, I would take him 100 times out of 100 over Giancarlo Stanton, assuming I don't care between first base and outfield, which I don't, going into a draft, and certainly not in round 11, I wouldn't care. I like Mountcastle's, jokes aside, profile way more. I don't understand why there's the gap between Santander and Mountcastle. To me, they're almost the exact same player. So I like Mountcastle. That being said, if you just look at his barrel rate or his hard hit rate and think there's a giant advance coming, like that he becomes a 40 home run guy because of how hard he hits the ball, I don't need to say to anybody who's listening to this podcast, the stadium change obviously did not help him, and there's no indication that they're changing the dimensions back. So I think that if you kind of ground yourself in his projections, he is a tremendous buy where he's going right now. The problem is, as Jeff says, there are other even better buys coming up in the exact same position. So for me to pull the trigger on him above some of those other buys is tough, but somebody's going to get Santander somewhere in round 11, 12-ish. And I don't think they're going to be disappointed. I think he's a plug and play hitter for the full season. And that's not nothing in this baseball environment.
Yeah. And his actually batting average with like in the main event and so forth would be like top three, like 256 is actually decent. Like,
oh,
it's
for
not
sure.
A drag.
I mean, that is one of it's weird to say that. That's one of the big differences between him and Giancarlo Stanton is I think his batting average is going to be 10, 15, 20 points higher than Stanton, which makes him a four category with, as Jeff says, a soupçon of speed added on. So like he's not the Giancarlo Stanton home runs, RBIs and whatever runs you happen to kind of fall into. So I like Ryan Mountcastle a fair bit. It's just who else is also still there. That's the counter argument to me.
Right. It definitely makes sense. Next guy on the list is Ian Happ. He is going as the 30. Wait, oh, hold on. I said that wrong. He is going as the 37th outfielder off the board. Last year, the 70th batter overall and end of season SGP. K percentage down 6%. Made a looked like a concerted effort to get a little more contact on the ball and strike out less. And I've heard him say that on his podcast as well. So how do you guys feel about Ian Happ this year, Jeff?
He's just kind of a boring five category sort of, like, he doesn't hurt you in any of them. So if you need an outfielder, and I mean, I know some people, I heard someone, I remember who it was in a podcast, like they took the first one and their second outfielder in the 13th round. And I was just like, okay. But it was just like, I think he's one that you can just plug in if you need someone to give yourself help. It's not really a great place for outfielders, so I think that's fine. But he really doesn't have a weakness, maybe possibly on his batting average. Isn't like a plus. It's not a negative where he's at right now like he used to be, but just fine hitter.
He's just one of those boring five-category guys. What the fuck are you talking about, Jeff? That's what everybody wants. This is what people burn their first-round pick to get, a boring first-round guy. And Ian Happ is sitting here in the 11th round, and you're like, yeah, he's okay. All he does is hits you 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and a good batting average, and hits near the top of the lineup. I mean, that's not actually what he's done in either of the last two seasons. So he has been a top 100 player. He was a top 100 player in 2022. Everybody wants speed power guys. Like, that's, there's no expert or not expert. There's nobody who plays NFBC style leagues who says anything other than the ideal draft is, don't put all your eggs in one cart. Draft as many multi-talented, multi-category guys as you possibly can get. That's Ian Happ. Like, he's a great buy here based on the projections. But what if the power from 2021 along with the improved contact and batting average from 2022 come together and suddenly he's like an easy top 50 player? And that's not crazy to me at all. Like, that's not wish casting. That's just a few things falling into place. So I think his floor is very high at this point of the draft and at this point of his like career, and the ceiling, It's not a top 10 player. Like, I'm not saying he's a first round player, you do not have to dream too much for him to be a top 50 player. It's weird to me there isn't more love for Ian Happ. Maybe now there will be. I like boring guys who just happen to do a little bit of everything. And to me, Ian Happ is that. So again, there are a lot of guys I like that we're talking about today, but Ian Happ is certainly one of them.
Interesting. Yeah, he had a league average home run to fly ball rate last year after spending multiple years hovering in the 20s. The last year was down to 11.9. So like you said, Rob, if that power does creep back along with the, you know, advanced contact skills, swinging a lot more in the zone too. I also heard him say that he was more aggressive in the zone, chased a little bit more, but I think that makes up for his ability and his contact rate and his own contact rate. So I do like Ian Happ a lot too. And I do feel like there's a spot here where there's really not a lot of great outfielders. And I'm surprised too that he lasts to this spot. We see Taylor Ward getting a whole bunch of helium. He's moving up. I feel like he's not, I think he should be pretty close to Ward anywhere they are. So yeah, Mr. Ian Happ. All right, next we're going to Anthony Rizzo of the New York Yankees. Jeff, we'll go to you first. How do you like Anthony Rizzo for the season? I guess talk about the whatever you can about Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say with Rizzo, and I'll just kind of rant here about it, and then we'll just kind of apply it to guys later, is he was one of the guys that was heavily shifted with the full shift last year. So he was shifted 84% of the time. And in the process, I looked at what the possibility was, and he could see a pretty decent boost to his batting average. And the deal is if you also give him a boost to his batting average, when he gets those hits, he's on base and can score more runs, and he can also get in more RBIs. So he's one of those ones, like, it's how much, if you believe they're going to get a boost, how much, and where those other stats are coming from. I've seen multiple people all over the spectrum on, you know, he's going to hit 60 points higher or there's going to be no change at all. So I don't know if you just want to take, you can agree with mine, you know, my take from the process. You could agree with someone else's, but it'll be interesting to see how these guys, how these left-handed hitters that were just completely shifted all the time deal with at least a partial shift. And then if they get that boost, that they'll actually see their some of their counting stats. I mean, the home runs obviously going to go up. If they hit a home run, it was going to be that way anyway. But they'll get a few extra RBIs and they'll get a few extra runs on top of that projection. And I don't know. It's he's definitely interesting. He's got his power. He's got that nice short porch right now. I think that that's what he's become. But I think there's going to be kind of a middle ground to it. It's where, kind of where I stand with this BABIP. And I think that there might be some deals on trying to focus on some of those guys with the high BABIPs or with that were highly pulled.
Are you suggesting, Jeff, that it's possible to do math and as opposed to simply saying, well, the shift has been banned and ending the sentence there, that you can actually like try to figure out what impact it might have on statistics of baseball players? That's possible to do?
Hopefully, yes. Yes. It was
Fuck, it's driving me crazy, people who just say they banned the shift and therefore Anthony Rizzo. It's like, okay, and what does that mean to me? Is it going to boost his batting average by 5 points? Is it going to like boost it by 50 points? Fuck, like do your own work, people. Or buy Jeff's book and Tanner's book and just copy Jeff's work. That's my option. That's what I'm doing. But don't just be lazy with these guys and say there's no shift and therefore Seager. It's like, okay, what does that mean? So is Seager a first round pick now, or does it change nothing, or is it just regression? It drives me crazy. Anyways,
why are there people saying that Corey Seager is going to be good this year?
There are people apparently who think Seager may get a few extra hits. Fuck. The only thing I find weird is, like, we all know the shift has been banned. Anthony Rizzo was really good fantasy wise last year. Like, for he was an accumulator for the most part, but he was good. It's weird that he's going like 70 picks later than where he finished last year. And I get regression, I get first base. But like when I do the math there, that makes Anthony Rizzo a pretty good buy. But again, it comes back to what we just said about the last first baseman as well. But like buy Jeff's book and it's all in there. You can just copy his work.
Do you guys have any opinion or thoughts on, so the shift is gone. All of these guys who have maybe changed their approach to just hit it over everyone's head into the seats, and maybe not Rizzo because he has that Yankee Stadium porch, but just the guys who got pulled a lot in general, and maybe they're just more taking the approach of like, now I can just hit it hard and see where it lands instead of maybe trying to lift more. You got, and like, and maybe coincides with less power from those guys.
Is your question, Rob, are players going to try to hit it softer and like on the ground to get around the shift who could hit it over the fence?
No, like, not softer.
I've adjusted by hitting home runs. Should I keep hitting home runs, or do I want to aim for where the like the second baseman used to be?
Could be.
Yeah,
not aiming, but just really changing their launch angle.
Players are always changing their approach, but I think the guys who have been able to successfully adjust are probably going to keep trying to hit the ball wicked hard, like, and pull the ball, because good things happen for a lot of those guys when they pull the ball really hard.
Well, especially if we see like a continuing trend of more sliders, more sinkers, like adjusting to the swing path that batters have chosen, and you know, now trying to beat them low in the zone instead of beating them with the high stuff. So I don't know, just a lot of awesome new stuff happening in baseball. So, but we're gonna just by the process, like you said, and that could be the analysis. Jose Miranda is next off the board. I don't know why he's going here, to be honest. I have a theory.
I have one for like the next, like we can.
So let me go first for this guy, and then Jeff can come in, and then I'll let him go first for everybody else. I think it's a great example of people saying, I really like Jose Miranda. Jose Miranda could really break out this year, and not making the decision on anything more than, boy, there's an opening for Jose Miranda now. I really like Jose Miranda. Jose Miranda could be good. It's like you list all of the hitters that we're talking about today, and one of them really doesn't belong. And the thing is, I really like Jose Miranda. I think Jose Miranda could break out. But when you actually ground it in numbers as opposed to just like hey, Jose Miranda, he's nowhere near like these guys. Like a true Jose Miranda breakout is like he would cut off his pinky if he could put up Anthony Rizzo's 2022 or Ryan Mountcastle's season or any of these guys' seasons. That's his breakout season. And there's far more likely that he comes nowhere close to that. So he, this is just hype. This is just people convincing, I want me some Jose Miranda as opposed to anything rational. That's my view.
Oh, I think it's the third base. I think people are just fearing third base and they don't want the next two guys that are, have a batting average sink, but they don't, but they get a power sink. Like Miranda doesn't really hits for some, but not as much as Matt Chapman and Eugenio Suarez. So I think we have some draft champions bias going on right now. Like I have to get the third baseman. I can't take a chance on some of the late guys because I have no one to replace. I know these guys will play all year, and that's what's going on. It'll be interesting. Actually, I could let someone else talk, and we have to see where they're kind of going in like the OCs right now. I wouldn't be surprised if they were going a little bit later in that just because people can move in and out. But like I said, with draft champions, you have to have a third baseman. You want at least some kind of anchor. And if you miss out on like those first six or seven that – You're having to jump in now, and this is where people are kind of doing it. I mean, I could also see the OCs kind of being an anchor to this, but I could also just see it falling. Like, I have no desire. I mean, if you want Jose Miranda, just get Yandy Diaz. I mean, you're kind of getting the same guy and you get it about 100 picks later, if not even more.
100%. I do not fear third base. There are lots of interesting late third base candidates, especially in Fab Leagues. I get DCs are different beasts. So I think the third base in DCs is a decent argument, but you're passing on way, you're leaving too many stats on the table when you're taking him in this point of a DC even. Like if you don't have a third baseman, I still think you're leaving way too many stats on the table.
Absolutely. He's got the same projected stat line as Brendan Rodgers, who you can get 100 picks later. So if you like this stat line, get it later. 100%.
Great point.
What's his ADP in the OCs, Jeff? Is it any different?
I didn't look.
Oh, good. Nice talking to you.
I can't talk and type at the same time. I'm not that talented.
It's fine. All right, let's move over to Jordan Montgomery. Got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals, where his Kate Hernine went up a little bit with the team, started changing his pitch mix a little bit. What's your thoughts on Jordan Montgomery this year, Jeff?
He kind of... just fine. Like he changed his pitch mix, but he's kind of always been this guy that's striking out about nine batters per nine, walking about three. He's on a good team. He's going to get some wins. I think he's kind of fits in the Chris Bassett territory that we talked about earlier, Luis Garcia. So I don't know if there's anything like super exciting about him. Like he's changed, like you said, you're right. He changed his pitch mix a little bit with the Cardinals. The Cardinals let him go a little bit longer, but it wasn't like he became anything super, but it's just, these are the type of the pitchers that are going right now. And he just kind of fits in with the rest of them.
Yeah. I have him ranked slightly higher than Bassett and Garcia, like, but it's very marginal. He's a guy who I would take if I have Jacob DeGrom on a team, if I have risky but high upside starting pitchers, and I just really need a floor I feel solid about, similar to Bassett and Garcia, I'd be fine with him here, but there still are more starting pitchers coming right afterwards who I like more. So like, but there's also the Cardinals voodoo magic. So like, I think Montgomery is going to have a quite good year for the Cardinals and will make their, whoever drafts him quite happy. Even though I don't think I'll be drafting a lot of Montgomery.
How about the zone contact from the four seamer going up 7% from 87 to 94? Is that kind of worrisome?
No.
Especially if they told them to throw it more. I mean, I think that's why the Yankees.
I think you're looking for stories if that's what you're splitting that at that level.
That's what I do. I make up stories. All right, let's move on to Eugenio Suarez, third baseman on the Seattle Mariners right now. He's going off the board as the 12th third baseman at a back pick 158. Solid power. BABIP prep backed up to his career average after 2 years of 214 and 224. So obviously, I think we know he's one of the most shifted against right-handed batters. Jeff, how do you think he's going to evolve around the shift ban restriction?
It'll be interesting. When I looked at the numbers, the left and right shift numbers were similar. So like when they changed it, they didn't get shifted across the board, or they went with that strategic shift is what Savant called it, which is almost what they're allowed to now. I saw them kind of getting it the same, and I think he could see a nice little boost to his batting average. I just don't know if it was like what he did last year with his batting average is what we'll see going forward. Like, I kind of felt like that was a little bit high. Like, I think he's probably more in the 220 range. And I don't know if that's if I can handle that kind of drag. Just from historically, like trying to look at the teams I build and everything, I usually allow myself one batting average drag. Like your team can usually handle one. It's when you start getting more than that, you start having a problem. So if I'm at this point, I need the power. And like I said, third base, if he kind of fills a need, I could do it. But I don't think you can take more than one of these type of guys along with your draft and still hope to kind of compete in batting average. If you're just blowing it off and dropping it, he's kind of, I think, a fine person. But power's there. And I think that's all you're kind of just looking for from him.
Yeah, I mean, Suarez has been shockingly consistent for a guy who's had a very up and down career. So other than his batting average, he's been just a rock of consistent power. Playing time's gone up and down a little bit. He had the one, you know, happy fun ball season, but otherwise he's basically been the same guy now for a long time. Also changing ballparks change things. He's almost the opposite of Corey Seager in terms of batting average with shift, in the sense that his BABIP is going to likely, if there was no change to the shift rule, his BABIP would regress the other way just naturally, likely. So it certainly would be projected to regress the other way down. So while the shift will help him a little bit to offset the regression, the reality is he has one of the lowest ground ball rates in baseball. So it's not like, on the one hand, he was shifted a ton. On the other hand, he's not hitting a ton of ground balls. So it's only going to have so much of an impact, even once you've regressed his BABIP on the batting average, which is why every single projection I've looked at has his batting average coming back towards 200 as opposed to the 236 from last year. He is like a better Joey Gallo example, though, of why valuation versus roster construction are two different things. I think the odds of him out earning his draft slot here are extraordinarily high. So if all I am looking to do in fantasy baseball is take, like in auction terms, take my $11 and earn $15, there's a very good chance you're turning a $4 profit on Suarez here. If you're looking to build a team around categories, though, you know, as Jeff said, like, can you build up enough of a batting average cushion so that you can absorb Suarez? For sure you can. Can you, like, say batting average has wild swings and let's see how it plays? You can do that. It hasn't worked out for me when I've just said, screw batting average. Let's see how this goes for me. But he's not, like, I don't like having guys who are likely to hit 200 on my team. I can have two guys who are likely to hit 220 on my team, but I think he's closer to the 200 because of the strikeout numbers in the profile. But yeah, like in the right format on the right team, he's a really consistent power hitter, which there aren't that many of.
Absolutely. And like you said, with the consistency, it kind of reflects in Baseball HQ's consistency metric. He's got a B, but like you said, it's just maddeningly what you would think as an inconsistent player. But
really, really solid inter and intra standard deviation number two, if you've checked. I don't know if you've looked at that, but very, very, very solid.
I still don't even know what they mean. I have to read
it. Nobody knows what it means, but it's provocative.
I read the article. I saw the panel.
It gets people going.
it's just creating chaos, I think. But I think if you want a guy with Suarez's profile, right now in the draft champions. Just take a swing at David VR on the Giants. He's pretty much the same kind of hitter. He might get to 30 home runs if he gets some time, strikes out a ton, hits the ball hard. We'll move on to another third baseman next in ADP, Mr. Matt Chapman of the Toronto Blue Jays, finished top 70 bat in end of season SGP last year, 27 home runs with the Toronto Blue Jays. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Matt Chapman?
Can we just repeat what we said with Suarez? Pretty much. It's almost the same thing. He hits the ball a little bit harder. He's probably might even have a low batting average is going to be the same. It's the same guy. He plays better defense, but we don't have, unless he's defense is part of that barrels league you're starting up. We can have that in there. But I mean, it's the same thing. It's like the person that missed out on Suarez, like their second place prize is Chapman. And then I don't know what our next third baseman is going to be, but that it's the same guy.
I think maybe this is hometown bias talking. I think he's more likely to hit 225 than Suarez. But
225.
But it's a problem. Like he had 538 at bats in 2022. 200 of them ended in a strikeout or an infield pop up. Like people don't appreciate. Like he's worse than Suarez in many ways because he doesn't just strike out. He's like the league leader in infield pop ups. And infield pop ups isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like Nolan Arenado hits a lot of pop ups, but he doesn't strike out. It's when you both strike out and hit infield pop ups, so automatic outs, that it's a real problem. So like out of 538 at bats, 200 of them were automatic outs, which means for him, I just ran these numbers, for him to hit 300, which, you know, let's dreamcast. He would have had to have gotten 161 hits on the 338 balls in play, which is about half of the time he hits the ball in play. They would have to go for a hit or a home run, which is also a kind of hit. Which, you know, one way to look at it, guys, that's only 38 more hits than he actually had. That's less than 7 hits a month. Maybe Matt Chapman can get 7 more hits a month than he does normally. His upside is 2019. His 2019, he went, 102, 36, 91, and a 249 batting average. And if he does that, he's a real baseball MVP candidate. You know, he's a 6 WAR player. The problem is he's still only a top 75, top 80 fantasy player because of the batting average and the lack of speed. And you put those two together. So on the one hand, you could say, well, it's kind of my Giancarlo Stanton argument. On the one hand, like in round 11, getting top 80 player is pretty good. But on the other hand, like that's his best case scenario. So I think that this is, again, DCs who are I'm really desperate for a third baseman, but I think the odds, again, like Suarez, of him earning more than his draft cost is pretty good here. It's the batting average hit, jokes aside about him hitting 300. He's not going to help you. He just may be closer to a neutral than I think Suarez could be. So I'm okay. Also, the changes to park dimensions should help Chapman. And if you like narratives, he's obviously a free agent at the end of this year. So if you think he hasn't really been trying, but this year, because he's going to get a payday, this is the year he's going to start really, really, really trying. He's given 120% this year. Then you can buy into that narrative. So I think Chapman will out-earn this cost. It's, again, whether you want to build a team around Matt Chapman here.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the next guy in ADP, Chris Sale, SP48 at pick 160. He has pitched 195 innings in the last 3 seasons combined. Is Chris Sale as big as a boom or bust pick in this draft, in this section of ADP, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that I don't know if the innings would be there. But I could see his ratios be the best in the game. Maybe DeGrom might beat it, but he has been great when he's pitched. And I know there's been some other ones, but I think that this is one of those Verlander ones from last year where it was like, oh, he's hurt. Is he done? What's going on? But we know what Chris Sale could be when he's throwing everything. So this is one of those ones that maybe, you know, like in an OC 750 in Las Vegas, I might end up taking Sale here. And
ooh, I'm taking notes.
I'm taking notes, huh?
Are you guys in an OC together in Big Money OC in Vegas together? Ooh, that's gonna be fun podcasting.
Oh, sure.
Can I do a live podcast from Vegas of your OC draft?
Wouldn't it be cool? Like, we could have like a penalty box almost kind of thing where you're just in the glass and you're podcasting and
Can I say something, Rob? There's never been a podcast done of a live draft that's ever been cool or good or should exist. There's no live podcast of a draft that is good listening. And I say that as somebody who's never actually listened to one, but it's unnecessary. Sorry, carry on with Chris Hill, Jeff.
But no, I just think that we have no idea what's going to happen on the different ranges. But if like with Stanton, everyone's just hoping for like a first round pick, I actually would take my shot on Sale instead on being the first round pick and hoping that that's what you get. And if you don't get anything, it's like with half the pitchers you're going to draft in this range, they're going to be nothing anyway. So might as well just go with the upside. So I could go with all. We could get nothing from him next year. It could be pretty ugly, but like the projections still kind of like him coming out of it. Like I said, I'm fine with taking a chance. I don't want him on like every one of my teams because it could just be a zero with everyone, but I could see taking a chance. And I think it was part of me last year, just kind of blowing off Verlander and wanting to play safe. But I think that's one thing with me having multiple leagues is I could end up taking Sale in one of them and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, I mean, the Verlander comp is interesting. To me, Chris Sale is Justin Verlander if Justin Verlander had a frontal lobotomy, because Chris Sale's an idiot. I'm a bit surprised the projections are as positive as they are about Sale, because I don't know how a projection system deals with a 34-year-old who made two starts when they were 33 and pitched 5 2/3 innings, made 9 starts in 42 innings when they were 32. He was good in those 11 starts in his age 32 or 33 season, but he literally could have been off at war for the last 18 months and pitched about the same amount. And so they've concluded he's still really good, which he very well may be. I just don't know how any of us know that he's still good. Whereas Justin Verlander was coming back from a surgery, and while like he was a unique case of somebody at his age coming back from that surgery, we have a lot of case studies. I mean, Jeff could probably has written about this, of guys coming back, and we know how they're likely to come back. We know the curves, we know the good, the medium, and the bad outcome. Whereas Sale, like, it's a weird combo of stuff for him. All that being said, if he comes back in spring training and his first 3-4 starts of spring training, the velocity is there, the stuff's there, the strikeout numbers are there, I easily expect him to be one of the highest, biggest movers going into the live drafts in Vegas. Like, I think if he looks like peak Chris Sale in spring training, like by the Saturday of Vegas, let's say he's made, I don't know, if I assume he's not doing WBC, so let's say it's all spring training. If he's made 5 or 6 starts and has been ace like Chris Sale in those starts with good buzz and like unnamed scouts saying he looks as good as he's ever looked, I think he's an easy 6th-7th round pick. So I think it's almost binary. I don't think he stays here. He either goes down or he goes up going into live drafts.
Yeah. The one interesting thing is I found out through my projection stuff I've been writing up at FanGraphs is that the Zips projection, just the plain one, he looks at his playing time is completely based off of historical accounts. There's no manual input at all. And he just has like Sale. He has kind of high projection. So he's dealing with comps. That's how Dan Szymborski does it, is he looks at pitchers that have done the same things and finds the most similar ones. So he just hasn't thrown like 80 innings. Like, these guys have just come back and done that, kind of moved into almost a closer routine when they haven't thrown that much, but he still has the good rate stats. So it'll be interesting to see. Let me see. Yep. One thing, he has him starting all of them, the system does, but it's just kind of, I like that the Zips is like, oh, we don't know any of the other stories, we're just looking at what historically has happened and go with it that way. So,
well, I haven't done the research, Jeff, but jokes aside, there can't be that many 32 and 33-year-old pitchers who effectively take those two seasons off for injury or other reasons, and then come back and make 30 starts in their age 34 season. Like, it's just not a normal career arc. So the comps must be a weird and certainly not. I am guessing, I could be wrong, not guys who have like career 30% strikeout rates. So like ace numbers and suddenly disappear and then come back. It's just not very common, but that doesn't mean he can't do it. I think the Verlander comp is not crazy at all.
I kind of just see him as just like, I would rather take Andrew Heaney 40, 50 picks later, who probably has the same kind of profile in terms of maybe won't last it through the whole season.
Here's where I disagree with you, Rob. Heaney has two things he needs to do in order. And there's no doubt we'll get to Heaney for sure before draft season. Heaney needs to stay healthy, and he needs to fix the big weakness that he still has, even though he showed glimpses last year of fixing the weakness. He needs to health and skill improve, but really solid foundation. All Chris Sale needs to be Chris Sale again. And he is, as Jeff said, one of the top 3-5 pitchers in baseball. Whether he can do that is a big question, but he doesn't need to fix anything. Heaney needs to do two things, and that is a big difference. I'm much happier to make a bet on a pitcher who only needs to do one thing to be great. Heaney has two things. Which doesn't mean
about
I bet on
his
Heaney.
Brain and his body. That's two things. You just mentioned his brain.
Fair. fair. Sale is an idiot.
Oh my God. All right, let's move through Jorge Polanco, the ninth second baseman off the board at roughly pick 160. Big drop in numbers last year from 33 home runs in 2021 to 16 home runs last year. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Jorge Polanco?
Man, the projections love him. And I kind of... He's had his good years where he stays healthy, but he's had the problems not doing it. I don't know if he's like as binary as like Chris Sale, but I could see him being really good and a great value, or he's just going to completely tank your team. Maybe there's some kind of level in between where kind of like the Luis Robert was last year, where he's playing some of the time and then not playing some of the time. I just don't know how to value him and with the playing time. He's someone I've actually held off on. Like, I could go all in, but like if he sits like one spring training game, he's like crossed off my board unless he goes just completely a lot further down. So I'm, like I said, it's not the skills. It's straight up, can he stay on the field with all the injuries he's had, all the surgeries he's had? Can I count on him for this pick? And maybe should I look at someone else? It's actually not the best group of middle infielders in this range. So maybe he's someone to take a chance on, or maybe I just take a good first baseman and just ignore the middle infielders in this range and deal with something else. So I just don't know what to do right now. And so far that has made me just pass over him.
Yeah. I love Jorge Polanco at this price. So much. I think again, the things I said about Ian Happ, he's exactly what we are looking for, which is five category guys. And even more than Happ, I have more faith in Polanco's batting average than I do Happ. My only concern about Polanco, beyond the health, which is not nothing, I acknowledge, is the Twins running. In a world where Byron Buxton doesn't run, and a world where the Twins don't just not run, they run so much less than everybody else. And with running on a team, it's always a bit of chicken egg. It's like, do you have the guys who are slow and therefore you don't steal, or do not steal, and then you conclude that you don't have the guys who can steal? With the Twins, it's a little bit of both, but I think it is an organizational philosophy. Could change. And look, he has averaged 10 stolen bases per 162 games. So it's not like Polanco, even with that in place, hasn't found enough spots over a 6-month season to run. But I could easily see him being a 4 or 5 stolen base guy instead of a 10 to 12 stolen base guy. But even if that's what he is this year, with the power upside that we saw 2 years ago, I love his value at this price. So give me all the Jorge Polanco if he stays here in terms of ADP.
Like it. Yeah. he bumped up his walk rate up to 14.5% last year. Wonder if that's just a decision to be a little more conscious of swing or in the zone or out of the zone. I don't know. It's a big
thing. I think it was honestly, it was having half your games against Detroit and Kansas City pitching. It doubled his walk rate. He doesn't have that this year. His walk rate's coming back down. He's going to face teams other than Detroit and Kansas City this year.
Is that in the process?
Yeah, that's the analysis. That was. I think that was a. I think that was a Tanner article. But yeah, no, I don't know.
All good. Let's move on to recently traded Pablo Lopez moves from Miami Marlins to the Minnesota Twins. Jeff, you think he's just a lateral move in terms of park leagues, and what do you think about his skill set going forward?
Oh, I'm not. He's another guy, like, he's going just a little bit more than I would like, higher than I'd like, but I can see why. I think the one thing that people might be seeing is that 3-mile-an-hour increase in his velocity over the course of the season, even though it really didn't get better results, which I don't 100% understand. Also, during the season, he was kind of messing with his pitch mix a little bit. I don't know exactly where he's going to end up with Minnesota. They kind of seem to know what they're doing. Like, it's not like, oh, he's going to Cleveland or Tampa Bay and everything's going to be great. But it's not like he's going to Kansas City either, where you just expect him to fall apart. So I'm interested, but I just think of the other guys going – I will go another route. I do wonder if he's getting a boost up from maybe people initially thought he was like with the unbalanced schedule. Like, I was the same way, where it's always like, I love those guys in the centrals. You just find those starters and you just, even if you couldn't use them every week, you use them about 2/3 of the time because they're facing other people then. Anyone from the Cardinals was always great that way. I kind of wonder if people think like he's going to be able to beat up more on the central teams and it's not going to happen as much this year. So he's fine. I just don't, there's other ones I like. And from all my drafts, I've never ended up with them because I'd rather draft the other guys.
I think he has more upside than the three starting pitchers we talked about earlier. I also think he has, I worry still about his shoulder. And while we know that the Minnesota Twins, are as rigorous as they take their physicals for newly acquired players more serious than, let's say, the Mets or the Giants ever would. that's a Carlos Correa joke. So I still worry, like, even though he got to 180 innings last year, like, the shoulder still worries me a little bit. But with Pablo Lopez, it's been sort of binary. He's either been very good or he's been hurt. And so again, it depends on my kind of starting pitching setup, but I'm a fan of Pablo Lopez. I could see myself taking him if some of the other, like, again, I keep saying this, we probably aren't even going to get to. I would take Charlie Morton over all of the pitchers we've talked about so far. So, like, Charlie Morton to me should be the first starting pitcher of this whole round. Going, he's not. We'll get to Charlie Morton. There are a few of the Tampa starting pitchers, for example, who probably we get to next week, who I also like from an upside perspective more than Pablo Lopez. But I think that Pablo Lopez is a really good pitcher when he's on the field. Like, there's, like, you can break down his stuff. You can break down everything. When he is healthy, he is, I think, a very, very good starting pitcher. And I think it was a really good trade for the Twins.
Yeah. So let's talk about Charlie Morton. He's next on the list. Had a rough going at first to start off the season, but I think we're kind of overlooking the fact he came back from a pretty, you know, decent injury recovery. And in the second half, he was just really good. Lights out, across the board better in every single metric. I think he's a solid buy right here. And I think he's the kind of guy that will move up if he's pumping 97 in spring training. Sure.
Yeah, I'm all in. I think I had to quit drafting him because I didn't want him in, like, in every league if he does happen to fall apart at age 38. He did struggle. I think it's around June 1st. He mentioned that he was kind of holding off because he had a broken leg, broken bone from the playoffs, and he was kind of holding back. And then he's just like, I can't hold back. I've got to move on. And that's what he did. Really, the only thing that I could see kind of against him, he is, even though he throws a bunch of pitches, only two are really good, and he throws them constantly. So he's kind of a two-pitch guy, and he kind of struggles the second and third time through the order. It's not, like, great through him. But otherwise, I'm just nitpicking. I think he's the person to get, even with, like, his kind of struggles last year. If he was just a bit better earlier on, he could have probably been at, like, 180, 185 innings. So I'm all in at this point. I think that even from the guys we've talked about, he should be going ahead of guys in the 10th, 11th, I mean, 10th, 9th, and 8th round.
Yeah. So first off, he's going to be 30. He is 39 already this year. He's not 38. He was 38. Now he's 39. Okay. Sorry. You see how that age thing works. So
no, I just have it in my spreadsheet that way. I'm not looking at it.
I blame Tanner. If your spreadsheet is messed up, just blame Tanner. He's a lot closer to, let's say, Luis Castillo, to Zach Wheeler than he is to the guys going in this range. And I acknowledge, given his age, that like any age, even with projections and age regression and like aging curves, it's possible he falls off a cliff. But you could say that about every starting pitcher. But yeah, I think he's wildly mispriced right here. He should not be going with these guys. He is his ceiling is significantly higher than those guys. And just to be clear, I would take Luis Castillo over him. I would take Zach Wheeler over him. But if you remove their names and remove their ages and actually just look at the underlying metrics and projections, they're much closer than you might think they are. That's how good I think Charlie Morton still is when he's healthy.
Absolutely fantastic. Let's move over to Javier Baez, the 18th shortstop going off the board. Pretty big gap between him and Nico Horner. He goes 26 spots after him. And with Thyro Estrada going pretty close to Baez too, they are also about 40, 50 picks ahead of the next shortstop at Bryson Stott. So what do you guys think of Javier Baez this year, Jeff?
I have no clue. He's always all over the place. It was his first time. He's in a big, first time with the team. He was in a big park. I don't know how motivated. He seems like someone that would be motivated. And it's also, he was hurt early in the year with a thumb. There's some talk that it bothered him. He won't like admit it, but other people kind of did. So maybe that's why he struggled. Earlier on, he had a great end to the season, really kind of turned it back on and kind of became himself. So he still had some power. He was still running. The batting average is just a complete sink. It was last year. And I guess not as bad as – it's still bad. I think I would take a chance on him in some leagues, possibly as like, if I've gotten a couple middle infielders, I want him as my middle. I'd hate to try to get him and another middle after this point. But after this, the other thing is after this year, he can opt out. So if he has a great year and he thinks he can get a better contract, which I doubt he could, but maybe he thinks he can, I think he's might be a little bit motivated. So yeah, I can see where people get frustrated and they're worried about the batting average tanking again, but I think he's someone that if he gave us like third or fourth round value, I would not be surprised either. Like, I think he possibly has that in him.
So I'll be honest with you guys. My bias coming into this was to just rant about how awful Javi Baez is and he's terrible and why are people drafting Javi Baez? And the worst argument I hear from people about Javi Baez is, well, at least you know he's going to play every day because he's on Detroit, so they're just going to play him every day. And while that's true, Detroit is like almost Oakland bad in terms of their lineup. Do you realize Javi Baez has hit 600 plate appearances exactly once in his career? So this notion that at least Javi Baez is on the field all the time may be true in 2023, because I do buy that if he's healthy, they're going to play him every day. It's just not who Javi Baez has been in his career. But here's the flip side. This is who Javi Baez has been other than last year, which was terrible. Like, what's the Italian term from it? It was a shit show, I think is the Italian word. Is that right, Rob, for what it was for Javi Baez last year? Like, these are his finishes on Razzball the three full seasons prior to that. 35th overall, 50th overall, 7th overall. So there's no doubt we're bringing a healthy dose of recency bias with just how bad Javi Baez has been fantasy. If all we care about is fantasy, forget real life, forget the contract, forget everything else. So I think I'd rather Polanco than Javi Baez. But again, like 2010 with upside of 30-10, 30-15, 30-20 even, is not nothing, and getting that in the 11th round is quite good. The risk is that he's horrendous again. So like the range of outcomes for Javi Baez is absolutely massive. But unlike Giancarlo Stanton, I've kind of talked myself into maybe the upside is worth that risk. There's also just enough like middle infielders who appear for free in fab leagues. And if I have to cut bait on Javi Baez, if I have to start benching Javi Baez, I'm pretty confident I can backfill and stream a fine middle infielder. So in fab leagues, I've sort of talked myself into liking Javi Baez as a bounce back candidate, which is not something I was expecting when I prepped for this podcast 15 minutes ahead of time.
I'm with you. Like Jeff noted, the early thumb injury, he went on the IL on April 15th, which happened from celebrating, by the way, with his new teammates. I guess he wanted to show he was down, you know. Yeah.
The odds of him having to celebrate again a Detroit victory and getting injured is so low. I mean, what are the odds that's going to happen again in 2023? So he's safe from that recurring injury. Sorry.
Good point. Good point. But three of his 15 hardest hit balls came before he went on the IL on April 15th. In the second half, to six to seven in stolen bases in the second half. So he was a little more aggressive. And his zone swing percentage was the lowest since 2016. It's coincidentally the last time he hit under 20 home runs. So I just think that he was being less aggressive from the injury, just trying to be out there and playing. But I'll take a chance here in the Fab League. For sure. I like this spot for Javi Baez. I'd probably take him over Thairo Estrada, which we'll probably talk about next week. But let's hit on our last guy of the day, first baseman from the Milwaukee Brewers, Rowdy Tellez, going at pick 163. His November and December ADP was in the 179-180-ish range. So he's shooting up the board. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Rowdy Tellez?
He's just kind of this group of first baseman. He was heavily shifted. He hits for a ton of power. That's what you're wanting. His projected batting average is better than last year. I mean, he was around 219 last year. Projections have him around 245. It was a 215 BABIP. So, yeah, I mean, they're not only taking his BABIP up to 250 right now. And as of right now, none of those are really taking the shift into account. So he could probably even get a little bit more. So, no, I think he's perfectly fine. The only thing with him is he has somewhat of a split, and some people, he has been platooned before, but just looking at the guys on the Brewers, I'm not really sold that any of them are really better than him to actually kind of just force their hand. So I think he's safe. I think we'll kind of see possibly if he gets platoon coming maybe into May or something, but I think you're at least safe with a full-time bat for a couple months. So really they just don't have any options right now in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, he played 153 games last year, so he was not a platoon bat anymore. I think I'm way higher on Rowdy, and I'm going to piss some people off like my Rodon comments yesterday. I think Rowdy Tellez is wildly mispriced here. I think he should be going much, much, much earlier. There are a few things that are going on. Jeff touched on some of them. So his BABIP was really low last year. So there's positive regression projected for his BABIP, which pushes the batting average, plus the shift, which isn't taken into account in a lot of the projections yet now. And when you put all of that together, what's the difference between Rowdy Tellez and, oh, let me pick a name out of just out of the sky, Matt Olson? And the answer is, if you assume both of them stay healthy and give Rowdy Tellez Matt Olson's playing time, and Rowdy Tellez is their second, third, fourth place hitter, Matt Olson's their cleanup hitter, so it's not crazy to project them for basically the same plate appearances. If you just take an aggregate of all the projections and give them the same playing time, the difference is one home run and 14 runs plus RBIs, and their batting average is roughly the same. And Matt Olson is going like 100 picks earlier, 150 picks earlier, not 150. We're only in pick 160. Part of that is Matt Olson is way overdrafted, but the other part of it is Rowdy Tellez is way underdrafted. So I think there is a lot of upside here, and there's a lot of floor here. A lot of this depends, though, and then I'll stop here, on what your assumption is for the playing environment for 2023. If you assume that the power environment is similar to 2022, then my argument is very compelling, because Rowdy Tellez is a 35 home run guy, potentially a 40 home run guy, in an environment where home runs are really valuable. If you assume that the power environment is something way different, then you can go back to the, man, I can piece together these home runs. I don't need Rowdy Tellez. But of all the first basemen we've talked about today, he should be going much earlier than all of them. He certainly should be going earlier than Giancarlo Stanton. I think a lot of us still have a bias of Rowdy Tellez is the guy I should be able to get for free on the waiver wire. And he's not that guy anymore.
I think that's very fair. I was going to say Christian Walker, but Matt Olson is also a very, very good.
Well, it's not provocative to say Walker. Walker is going like 10 picks earlier.
That's why
Matt Olson is like a whatever, a third round pick, a fourth round pick, or something absurd like that. It's not clickbaity enough to compare him to somebody going like last week's ADP if we'd started in round 9.
Sorry, Rob. I'm new to this stuff, man.
You did really well, man. And we've kept this under 2 hours. Is this the shortest pod you've done in the last 5 years, Rob?
Besides that 30-second, maybe?
The 30-second promo.
Yeah, no, that was I had one, I think, an hour and 15 last week. So listen,
did somebody have like a heart attack and have to be rushed off to the hospital mid-podcast or something?
Yeah, my dog had to be. I had to go to the vet.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. We shouldn't make dog jokes. That's really sad.
It's okay. It's all good. But I appreciate you guys doing this with me, man.
Oh, this was a ton of fun.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. It's a ton of fun. And we'll continue next week, just rolling down this ADP train. And find Rob at Rob Silver on Twitter, Jeff Zimmerman at Jeff W. Zimmerman, and the Launch Angle Pod at Launch Angle Pod. And we'll catch you guys next week. Thank you.